Hello, welcome to the Dot Metaverse podcast. I'm Ido Siegel, CEO of Touchcast. We're leading the metaverse into the enterprise realm. Join us every week as we explore key themes and ideas surrounding the metaverse.
Welcome. Today we have a really exciting conversation for you with a dear friend, Saeed Al-Darmaki from Shisha Capital, based in Dubai. And I think it'll be fascinating because of the point of view that he has on the ground in what I think is one of the most exciting regions, embracing Web3 and the crypto economy.
There's so many new things that are coming up, and there's so many things that are happening, and there's so many things that are forced onto you that if you don't adapt or change, then you'll be left behind.
Saeed, thank you so much for joining us today. I would love it if you can start by maybe introducing yourself and your firm and what you guys do.
Sure. Thank you, Ido. Very good to be speaking to you today. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a few weeks now. So my name is Saeed Al-Darmaki. I'm the founder and CEO of Shisha Finance, which is a decentralized non-custodial VC, which is a DeFi platform that's disrupting the traditional VC system. I've been personally involved in the blockchain and crypto space for the last 5 years when I co-founded a crypto fund called Alphabet. Before that, I used to work for Abu Dhabi Investment Authority, which is one of the largest global sovereign wealth funds. I was there for 9 years. I used to focus on the fixed income and treasury side of the asset classes, and I've switched over from the lowest risk asset class to the highest risk asset class overnight. And it's been a very interesting and colorful journey since then. And it's been very, very interesting to see the change of mindset in people over the years, because back in the end of 2016, most people in the region here had really no clue what crypto was or what blockchain technology was or what the use cases of blockchain technology were. But I obviously, because I started the process of setting up a actual crypto fund, I kind of started to learn about blockchain technology and its different use cases. And I knew that this was the future back then. And I knew that, for example, Bitcoin solved a lot of the problems that are inherent in the current fiat and monetary system, and the issues that have come about with the printing of money and the huge amount of debts that central banks and governments have been accumulating over the years. And I think Bitcoin solves those problems, as well as other crypto and digital assets. And I think the level of innovation over the last 5 years has been tremendous. And then with the latest use cases that have been pretty exciting, such as NFT and metaverse and play to earn and gaming and so on, there's been a whole lot of excitement and a whole lot of amount of capital that's gone into the space, especially with DeFi, which is decentralized finance, which has been disrupting the traditional finance world. So yeah, I've been really angel investing in crypto projects at a very early stage, and supporting a lot of projects over the years. I've probably invested in over 100 projects personally, and I've been advising a couple of dozen projects over the years too. And Shisha Finance is just an extension of what I have been doing and what I have had experience in. And the idea of the platform is to give everyday retail people or people that are new to the space access to a diversified portfolio without needing to do all the research and speaking to the founders of projects and finding out which projects are good and which are not, and I'm going through the process of making the mistakes and you know, losing sums of money for investing early stage, which I have done and my team has done in the past. So we've gone through the whole process and we've gone through the learning curve, and we want everybody else that's new to the market to enjoy the benefits of, you know, seasoned professional investors, and without needing the the huge amount of capital or the extensive network or connections or the putting in the time that's required to get that kind of portfolio. So very passionate about the space, and I want to give back to the community, and I want others who are coming into the space to enjoy the benefits of what I have enjoyed in the past 5 years. And I think there's so much more to come over the next 5 years, and would be really happy to talk more about specific topics that you have in mind, Dido.
I think just listen to you describe it, I basically have a million questions. It sounds really fascinating from both a investor perspective, a mechanical perspective, but I do want to start with an area that is a cultural perspective. I've been in the tech industry for 30 years, and I can tell you that there's a severe lack of diverse voices in terms of the regions, the languages. Every form of diversity you can imagine is lacking in the technology industry that's really been dominated by, I would say, kind of a West Coast stereotype. And I think a lot of our listeners have grown up in these fishbowls, and it's hard for them to imagine a world outside of their own, and one as vibrant as the one that you're swimming in Dubai in these yes. years. So I wanted to ask you a bit about the culture of the Emirates and why you think there has been such an embrace and such agility of execution within your culture, and so to the benefit of our audience, because I think it's worth stopping and celebrating a bit.
For sure. Yeah, no, great question about the culture here. And I would say that it starts from when the country was created. So the country has only been created since 1971. We had our independence. We were previously a British colony. And the ruler, the first ruler of the UAE was an extremely visionary person. He had, you know, a very, very... he was high morals and high ethics and a high kind of work ethic. And he always wanted to look after his people and wanted what was best for his people. And the UAE discovered oil as a resource. And luckily, unlike most other countries that didn't do the right thing with the resource that they had, the rulers of the UAE were visionary and realized that, you know, oil was a precious resource and that it was a resource that was being used globally for many different purposes, and that it had a lot of value, and that it would keep its value over the long term. So the rulers of the UAE made a point of efficiently using resources and also technology and being visionaries, in that the UAE was pretty much a desert back then. But if you look at it today, it's you know, it's a modern kind of landscape with huge skyscrapers and a variety of kind of environments and a huge mix of cultures today. There's people from all over the world that travel through Dubai or do business in Dubai or live in Dubai, and you know, that just the pace of development and the execution from the leaders has been tremendous, and that's been passed through to the people of the UAE and Dubai. And I've been very fortunate to have come through and seen all the massive development, and the leadership has always been embracing of emerging technologies, and blockchain technology is no different. And so much so that the government has actually recently established a virtual asset regulator that would manage digital and crypto assets. But I think, you know, the evolution of what's been going on in the UAE has been amazing, and the rulers have been building towards this for the last 50 years. And we are at a point now where everything is just falling in the right place at the right time, and we have a really, really good regulations, and we have a good pool of talent that is either moved here or been learning over the last few years. But yeah, I mean, the culture is very embracing of all different nationalities. It's visionary, it's hardworking, it's the UAE people are very hospitable and very welcoming people and very neutral people. They don't really like to kind of go into deep politics and so on. But we've been very fortunate that the rulers and the ruling family in the UAE has been absolutely tremendous and has been providing all the resources and developing so many things here over the last 50 years that it's just been incredible to see.
Yeah, as I listen to you, I find it striking. You know, I was born in Jerusalem, spent my childhood in the U.S., kind of reluctantly came back to Israel right before COVID hit. And there's a lot of commonalities in the creating something out of nothing, even though there's a history of, you know, big challenges culturally between the Israelis and the Arab states. But now, fortunately, we're in a very different place, a place that I think lends me a lot of optimism, you know, about what humanity is capable of doing in the shadow of the terrible things we're seeing, you know, unfold in Ukraine, where we also have a team, by the way. So it is to be celebrated what can happen when humans actually collaborate and work to build things instead of breaking them down. And I think the case of Israel and the UAE is a great example. There's been such a fast friendship forming in so many levels. And I think so much benefit to both peoples is gonna evolve from that. So it really is an exciting time. Like when I was in Dubai in the past doing business, I would need to come in with my U.S. passport. It was, and I was asked by my dear friends to not mention that I also have an Israeli passport. You know, it was a very strange experience, and one that was very eye-opening for me, because growing in the fishbowl of Israel, the representation of Arab countries is very different, and it was very illuminating and refreshing. To experience the culture and the diversity and openness and that you've mentioned. I think one of the other things I've observed is that my journey into the Web3 space has really been dominated by people that were born in India. I find that, and maybe you have some insights into why that is the case, that they're really dominating this field in ways that is hard to comprehend, and only people that are in it can see how culturally, and these are really interesting topics for me, and it's sometimes maybe hard to talk about in a very politically correct environment, but it's important to celebrate the, you know, these diverse things and not just to shy away from them. Why do you think that is, and from your experience?
Yeah, great question. I think so in the UAE we actually have a very big Indian population, mainly because India is not very far from the UAE. So we've had a lot of Indian people that have moved over here and have been working here and have been living here. And actually, the UAE infrastructure and buildings and everything that you see in the UAE, most of it is actually has been built by Indian people. And it's just been historically a fact that Indian people have somehow managed to find IT and technology sectors as areas where they, you know, they would pick up the kind of programming languages and the requirements to actually excel in IT for such a long period of time that, you know, they've just, it's in their culture to kind of be educated and they're extremely, extremely hardworking people. And when they set their sight on something, they make sure that they actually get there. So very determined, very hardworking people. And, you know, they've done so many things for the UAE that we have to appreciate and we have to mention. And I think, you know, they've just been always been very present in anything IT related or technology related. And that's continued over the years. And especially with blockchain technology, you see a lot of developers and coders and engineers who are from India and the subcontinent, and that's going to continue to be the case.
I think that reflecting on that, like these three kind of secret ingredients that are making the Emirates such a hotbed for this revolution, the cultural openness and foundations set forth by the Emirates, with everything that comes with it, coupled with this bridge to India, which has brought in tremendous talent, and a legislative and regulatory environment that is allowing the field to flourish, is making what's happening there probably the most exciting area in the world right now in this space. And that's something that most people, I don't think, are necessarily aware of. But it is the case. And I think the Emirates are really leading the world, just like Silicon Valley led in other revolutions. And there's, as a consequence, I think, a lot of opportunity. So I'm really hopeful that things will continue to accelerate, and that those ingredients will continue to thrive, and because it's such a great foundation, which I've experienced firsthand. I was just in a conversation with Sandeep from Polygon, and he mentioned that they just ran a hackathon, which I suspect had some pretty hard problems. And the winner of the hackathon was a 14-year-old teenager from India. And not only did he solve the problem better than everybody else competing, he also created a full set of documentation, like professional documentation. I just find that incredible. That's just generally when I attend an event in the crypto space and I can spot a few white hairs on your beard there, I'm kind of always the oldest person in the room. Do you experience
it,
that?
It has its benefits. Has its benefits. I mean, in general, like the average age in the blockchain industry is pretty low. I think because it's a very new technology.
Can you guess what it is? Can you throw out a number? What is your intuition telling you?
If I had to guess, probably be 21. I think average age.
Right.
So we're at the higher end, obviously, but you know we've got some life experience and we've got experience.
We have something to offer.
So I'd like to think that we're wise people.
But it is
I think a common denominator amongst the older folks in the industry is actually the openness to change and openness to learning of new things. So I think that's extremely important in this industry because there's so many new things that are coming up and there's so many things that are happening and there's so many things that are forced onto you that if you don't adapt or change, then you'll be left behind. And if you don't continuously learn and continuously seek knowledge, then you will be, you know, all these young people out there will overtake you basically because they are hungry and they are learning and they are working really hard. So I think that gives them the advantage. But if you level the playing field by being equally hungry and absorbing of knowledge and seeking knowledge and kind of learning new things and are open to change, then you know, you wouldn't be at a disadvantage. You would probably be at an advantage because then you have other kind of skill sets and experiences that you've acquired over the years.
Yes, the plasticity of thought that you retain as you mature as an entrepreneur is really critical, and it's inert for someone that's 21 years old. There's a lot of plasticity, whereas if you're a leader in a big company, let's say a CMO or a CEO, which are the type of people that would be listening to us talk right now, because we're focused on how enterprise embraces this revolution. And at TouchCast, you know, we work with the biggest companies in the world and are lucky to also have some of them as our partners, investors, go-to-market channel partners. It is a material effort to lean in and try to expand your consciousness to try to understand these fundamentally different ways of thinking about the world. It almost hurts the brain to be able to make that observation. And this metaphor comes to mind for me that I read that there's, you know, two young fish are swimming down a creek, and a middle-aged fish comes, kind of swims by them. And he says, hey, boys, enjoy the water. And he keeps swimming, and the two young fish keep swimming. And then they look at each other, and they say, what's water? I would use it in the context of people's perception of things. The most obvious things are the ones that are harder to see. Brought to me in the context of what cryptocurrency is, because people don't ask what is money, right? And that was the context. But as I heard us converse about our late age, I also occurred to me that I don't know who this story is about, the younger fish or the older fish, right? Because the older fish also doesn't understand, you know, what the hell's going on because everything is so different. So maybe we're all swimming in different liquids right now, and it is important. And I think that maybe is a good segue to talk a bit about the work you're doing at Shisha, which is fascinating to me. I've been building companies since I was a teenager. Sold three companies. I've been on public, private boards. I've dealt with countless venture capitalists. And in this round of my life, when I started TouchCast, I actually funded the company myself for the first 3 years and really focused on investors that were not in the venture space, that were strategic, big family office, partially because of my experience with the challenges of the VC model and everything that comes with it. And one of the things that I wanted to maybe educate our audience a bit about is that when one conducts investments in the Web3 crypto space, it's not really what you think of traditionally as equity investments. It's something very, very different from that. And I want to illustrate a scenario for the listeners, and maybe you can comment on it. When a project starts, it and I'm not suggesting all projects are the same, but it basically might issue a token, and there might be a seed round for that token and a private round for that token. And then eventually there'll be the public round for that token where everyone can buy it. During that seed and private stage, these are kind of institutional rounds. They are typically accessible to people that are closer to the project, people that are strategic. And when you buy these tokens at these prices, seed and private, they're materially lower price than what their public price is going to be. And we're talking about factors of between 10 to 100 plus if the project is successful. So if you invest in these projects, you're not really buying equity in a company. You're effectively buying a token that appreciates, that has some liquidity associated with, so you can exit your position with a vesting schedule. And all of this is done through smart contracts, meaning it's all sitting on the blockchain, which is just remarkable. And the benefits of this, if you know how to choose the projects, is that the returns are staggering. And the benefits for the people running the project is they're not really selling equity per se. They don't have that sense of managing a cap table. They're really making money for people almost at hello. And of course, just like in the startup scene, most of these projects will fail. But some of them, if you know how to choose them, will be very successful. So that small primer I just provided is something that most of our audience is not familiar with. And maybe you can elaborate, because this is your world more than it is mine.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Ido. You've explained it in a very elegant way, and I think you've captured the most important parts. But I think what would determine if your investment in this token issuance is going to be fruitful or not is the actual tokens themselves, the utility of the token. What are these tokens being used for? Is there a specific need or the specific utility for these tokens or not? If the answer to that question is yes, then more likely than not, you will be successful in your investment. And like you said, when you're investing on the token side, it's different to investing on the equity side, because you don't have an equity in the shares of the actual company. But, you know, it is kind of similar in a way that if the actual company is successful in what it sought out to do when it issued the token, then you will make a return on your investment, and you will see profits from your investments and so on, similar to if you did make an equity investment in a company. What's the most important thing is how the company is performing, and has it been achieving its objectives in the short term and the long term? And if the answer is yes, then your equity investment is most likely going to be a fruitful one. So there are similarities, there are differences. But like you said, the token is, if there is a blockchain element to what the company is doing, and if there is a use case element of the blockchain technology itself, which is the reason why the token is issued, then that's the reason why people invest on the token side. And I think, you know, back in 2017, when it was known as the ICO age, when it was called initial coin offerings, there was actually people that are raising money for these tokens without actually continuing to do what they promised they would do. And a lot of people lost a lot of money in that period of time. Fast forward 5 years, and I think the market is much more mature. Investors are much more mature, and they've seen the past, you know, huge losses that people have made, and they want to avoid that. So I think people are much more diligent in making decisions about investing in companies that are issuing a token rather than an equity. But I think it's, like you said, it's much more liquid, and the timeline for which you can exit your position as an investor is usually much shorter on the token side than on the equity side.
Yeah, I guess one of the big differences from the wild ICO days is the norm that's developed, that the people running the project operate on a vesting schedule of 6 years, is kind of the norm that I'm seeing, which is to say, even though they're issuing this token and they hold a significant portion of it, it will vest over time. And similarly, those people that participate in those seed and private rounds also have a vesting schedule, at least in sophisticated projects. And obviously the reason for that is to not create selling pressure on the value of the token so that it can continue to thrive. Do you, in your portfolio, are many of your investments on a smart contract that is effectively releasing tokens to you? Like, what percentage of your volume is kind of vesting at this point?
Yes, so very good question. We are incubating and accelerating and investing at the seed stage of a lot of projects. We have about 50 projects in our portfolio at the moment, which we've added to the portfolio over the last year since we've launched the platform. All of the investments are done through a contract that's signed, that's called the SAFT. And then the actual team behind the projects distribute the tokens that you're due through a smart contract, through a distribution smart contract. So yes, when you do invest early on, there is a kind of a lockup period, and there is a vesting period associated with your investment. So pretty much all the projects that are in our portfolio all have lockup periods and all have vesting periods. I would say about 10 of those are slowly now starting to vest tokens to us as a platform. Mm-hmm. And the remaining 40 are still, we're still locked up and we're still waiting for the vesting period to start. So, and the reason why there is a lockup and vesting period now, and the reason why that the team, if the team has an allocation to tokens, they are also locked up and vested over a long period of time, is because the actual project needs time to, you know, develop and to establish itself and to acquire the users that they need if they have a product or service or a platform. So these things take time. So you have to give a chance for the token to kind of find its feet and find its value. And that normally would only happen in the long term. Yes, in the short term, there could be really huge increases in price, but that's usually temporary. And then things kind of flatten out and slow down as the hype goes down. So I think it's just an evolution of how investments have been made in the industry and how they are being made in the industry. And I think right now it's a good kind of balance, and it's a good process and a good system. And like you said, smart contracts govern how these tokens are distributed to investors and so on. And you can see everything transparently on the blockchain.
Right. And that's, I just want to linger on that for a minute, going back to our example with the fish in the water. You say those words and you live in this world and it's obvious to you, but for many of our listeners, it's unfathomable that the vesting is automatically executed through a piece of software that sits on a decentralized blockchain. Whereas historically, if I was to have a vesting structure, I would have a legal construct, an agreement, let's say an options agreement. I would have a legal department in my company. I would have a finance function in my company. I would need to issue stock and shares manually. This entire thing is obviously very much open to human error, to a lot of changes in circumstances and trust issues, because situations change and the power structure supports people with more power in every given point. Whereas in this environment, there is no pollution of any human aspect of this. It's all fully automated and can't be changed by anyone once it's in place, because that's the nature of a smart contract, which is code, which is quite remarkable. But you mentioned the SAFT agreement, so maybe if you can elaborate on what that does.
Yeah, sure. That is basically a legally binding document. The abbreviation stands for Simple Agreement for Future Tokens. And that is effectively the founders of the project signing a contract and an agreement with a specific investor in the project. And that lays out the terms and conditions and lays out the expectations from both parties and lays out how many tokens is going to be received by the investor and how many dollars are going to be provided by the investor to the project and all the pertinent details to the agreement.
And that's still not a Web3 construct, right? That's still a traditional agreement, legal binding agreement between humans and not between wallets.
Yes, that's correct. That is not something that's on a smart contract. That is something that is still kind of a manual process. Not sure why nobody's kind of thought about, just using a smart contract. There are some kind of platforms out there which do settle these agreements through a smart contract on blockchain. Mm-hmm. But the majority of people kind of in the space still do this kind of contract the old school way. I guess it's just to kind of hold on to something and something that's real and something that's signed by both parties and so on. So I think that's something from the legacy kind of processes.
Yep. And I guess
remained.
Again, for the benefit of our listeners, one of the mechanical reasons that exists is because in most occasions, if not all, at the point where you're engaging in investing at a seed, the token is not necessarily even minted yet, right? It's still to be expected. So you can really lock it up in a smart contract because there's nothing to really connect to that smart contract, right? So that's a mechanical thing that probably someone will solve in the future. But I mean, this kind of tops on a massive topic of how foundationally different doing business in Web3 and the crypto space is from our traditional ways of doing business, which is, and the word that always comes to mind is the word trust. What has been your experience as you evolved into this space? You mentioned that you had a conventional career in the finance world. How you saw, and money is all basically trust, right? How has that concept evolved for you from when you were working in traditional instruments to kind of the life you've lived over these 5 years?
Yeah, so I think the fundamentals or the basics of investing or managing assets is common in the traditional kind of financial markets and the crypto markets in general. I think trust, you mentioned the word trust. Actually, blockchain technology is a trustless layer or a trustless network and a trustless technology, because you don't have to trust the centralized entity. It's a decentralized in nature. So you know that crypto assets on a blockchain are governed by a code which can't be changed and is fair to everybody in the system. So you don't need to trust for example, a central bank or a government to know how much money you have or how much money you've sent to somebody or how much money somebody has received from you or if you actually own that specific asset, which is a crypto asset in the blockchain space and money in the traditional space. So I think, you know, it's been, there was an adjustment period to kind of get used to the nuances and the differences between the two kind of areas. But I think over time, you know, if you do have that kind of traditional investment background, then it helps a lot with kind of getting you to understand the differences. And then once you start, you know, investing and once you start actually interacting and participating in the digital asset space, then you start learning all of these differences and you start getting used to it and you start getting used to the differences in the level of risk and the volatility in the market as well. So there's so many new things that spring up to you, but then as you get used to them, then you kind of, you're okay with it over time. So I think for me personally, it took me about, I'd say 6 months before I was kind of comfortable and had the basics, the general basics of operating in a digital asset space.
Yeah, I think this the sense of letting go of a lot of behaviors and anxiety that comes with that is for me personally been one of the hardest transitions. And I really had to force myself to do these things because I intellectually understood everything and understood the massive potential, but maybe emotionally from a fear and anxiety perspective was an incredible leap of faith. And I'm sure you had those moments when you clicked the button and do you remember one of those moments, like a big transaction that one of those first?
Yeah. I had one or two big transactions go wrong in the past. It was horrifying, but I think it's in a human nature to be fearful of what you don't know or what you don't understand. So I think it's just natural for us to kind of be hesitant and fearful of new things that we have to adjust to. And, you know, it's just a matter of actually forcing yourself to, you know, to actually kind of understand and read and understand and gain knowledge on this new and wonderful technology and asset class before you kind of venture into it and read as much as you can about, you know, what to expect and what others have experienced in the past. And that usually helps a lot, but there's still kind of that emotion and that kind of fear and that hesitance is always going to be there because we are humans and we are emotional beings and that's what defines us. But there's always ways to kind of mitigate and try to kind of make it a bit easier for you. And one of those ways is by talking to people and learning from their experiences and reading as much as you can. And then you'll be a little bit more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I think also my experience has been that the notion of time and how projects evolve is very different from the traditional corporate or even startup space. Can you comment a bit about kind of what a life cycle of a project might look like? And this contrast by, on the one hand, very high velocity, and on the other hand, needing a lot of patience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think in the crypto world, with crypto projects, investors tend to be more demanding and more have higher expectations of kind of realizing a return than with the traditional kind of startup world. But in many ways, a crypto startup is very similar to a traditional startup in any other industry or sector. there are a lot of commonalities. There are a lot of challenges, similar challenges that startups face in both worlds. But I think the pace and the expectation and the amount the amount of money that's actually being thrown at crypto startups is tremendous. And I think it's at a level that we haven't seen before. And I think the numbers, if you look at the inflow of capital into crypto and blockchain startups over the last few years, the numbers have just been exponentially growing. And I think, so I think it's just the level of expectation and from investors is different to a regular startup. I think most crypto investors want to see a return as quickly as possible, and they want to see liquidity on the tokens they've invested in. Whereas with traditional startups on the equity side, you know, investors on that side realize that it takes a lot longer for a company, for a startup to reach an IPO stage, and or to reach a Series A or Series B stage, and you have to be a bit more patient there, and the mindset is geared towards the long term there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But with myself, because of coming from a traditional investment background, I've always been somebody that looks at the long term. So I'm not the type of investor that would rush a crypto startup into kind of delivering or listing or doing things that other crypto investors would want. I would be more kind of supportive and speaking to the founders of the projects more regularly and trying to help them in any way I can,
mm-hmm.
instead of asking them when they're going to list and when there's going to be liquidity and so on.
Yeah. And I guess for those listeners that are familiar or not familiar, because again, as I mentioned, some of them are in the corporate world, so they may not be that intimately familiar with the startup scene either. When you observe the model, and I alluded to earlier, the business model of the venture capital industry, as a GP, a general partner in a VC fund, or the founder of a fund, which is what you are, you have different constituents that you are effectively managing. And it, of course, starts with this notion of having a fund, which implies historically that you need LPs, these limited partners that invest in your fund. So you would basically create a deck, just like a startup CEO, and you would go out on the road and convince people that you are the right steward of their capital, and they would basically invest in your fund, which typically has a finite pre-decided size, let's say $1 billion. It's seen as a form of diversification by whether it's institutionals, typically not just individuals, that effectively invest in the fund. And after that moment in time, you have that $1 billion sitting there. You have a percentage of it that's used as management fees that helps you hire more people, analysts, have an office, impress investors that you're serious, and build a portfolio that gives you credibility, and over time, hopefully be successful and start your next fund. And that's the treadmill you're on as a manager of a fund, is building the fund after fund and benefiting from the carry and the returns of those investments.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like in the world that you are building, which is a radically new world? And how is it different from what I just described?
Yeah, with what I'm doing right now, it's disrupting the traditional VC system, because we're actually not charging the people that are participating on our platform. We're not charging them a performance fee. We're not charging them a management fee. There isn't the minimum amount to invest. There isn't a requirement to complete onerous amounts of paperwork for like KYC and AML. Everybody that's participating on our platform does so using a smart contract and by interacting with the smart contracts on our platform. So it's completely different model to the traditional VC model. And the way that we are aligned with the community of investors that we have is that we as a company have an allocation of the total supply of tokens, because we have issued a token and we've retained as a company a percentage of those tokens. And and it's in our interest, because those tokens are on our balance sheet and they determine the value of our company, it's in our interest to make sure the value of our token is going up over time. And the way that would happen is if the portfolio that we have built over time is successful and is generating really good returns for people that are participating to enjoy, then that would encourage more and more people to participate, which means that there'll be a higher demand for our token, which means that the value of the token would go up in the long term. So I think it's very important for us to be much more kind of active and supportive as an entity to the projects that are in our portfolio. I think most traditional VCs, they kind of invest the money and then they're kind of more passive and they only kind of support the projects as and when they need, instead of being very kind of very active and supportive and always touching base with the founders of the projects, which is what we tend to do. And then unlike other VCs, we actually have thousands of people that have invested in our platform. Most traditional VCs have a handful or, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 LPs maximum that have participated and put their money in. With us, because there's no minimum amount, we have a community now of, I think the number is about 10,000 people now. So it's a lot more demanding as well, because once people put smaller amounts of money, they kind of actually worry about their money more and they kind of tend to ask a lot more questions and are a lot more demanding. So we're fortunate to have a good team of moderators and community leaders who manage the community and speak to our community on a daily basis. So it's a lot more active, a lot more engaging, a lot more demanding, a lot more dynamic, and very, very exciting.
Yeah, that's really incredible. But I guess I'm trying to follow the puck here on the business model for you. You mentioned that you have a token that you've issued, and the hope is that the success of that token is a reflection of the success of the portfolio. But can you explain the mechanics of that? So let's say I'm an investor. I come in to your platform and I have $100,000 in ETH, and I come in and I want to invest that. Can you just describe the flow of that and how that intersects with your token?
For sure. So if you have Ethereum as an example, then you would go on one of the exchanges, one of the crypto exchanges that our token is listed on, and you would exchange your Ethereum for our Shisha token. Once you acquire our Shisha token, then you would connect your Web3 wallet to our platform, and then you would stake those Shisha tokens. And once you stake those Shisha tokens, that's the equivalent of an LP position in the platform. And you then would get the tokens of all the projects that are in our portfolio distributed into your Web3 wallet, depending on your percentage staked against the total percentage, against the total amount staked on the platform. So it's a question of converting from, if you don't have crypto, you have to go from fiat to crypto, and then from crypto to Shisha, and then stake using a Web3 wallet and interacting with a smart contract. And then once you've staked, then you automatically start getting the tokens of all the projects that are in our portfolio according to the lockup and vesting schedules attached to each project.
And this staking pool is only Shisha. It's not Shisha and Heath in equal measure.
It is. There is one part that is only Shisha tokens. And then there is one other option, which is when you match Shisha with Ethereum, for example, and you stake those liquidity pool tokens. And the returns from that is significantly higher than the returns or the rewards from just staking the Shisha token itself, because you're taking a higher risk by providing liquidity.
Right. And how big are those pools today?
So right now, the total value locked is, I think, around $25 million, total value locked. So that's pretty reasonable. And It's a pretty good amount. I think the pool started off at about $9 million a year ago. So it's seen a good steady increase in value. And I think it's still early days because there's still a lot of projects in our portfolio that haven't started vesting their tokens. And I think once that starts happening, then the people that are staking on our platform will start seeing a higher yield. And that then I think the wider kind of crypto community, once they see that and they see the benefits associated with participating on our platform, will see some more interest in the community and the expansion in the community and so on. So I think it's still very early days. It's only been a year. I think maybe in the next 2 to 3 years, that's when you'll really, really start to see the benefits of what we're doing.
So if you, just to kind of repeat the mechanism, I take $100,000, I basically convert it into Shisha through an exchange, and I go to your DeFi app dApp, which is on your website, and I deposit the equivalent $100,000 worth of Shisha token in this staking pool. And then over time, and that does not carry an APY like other kind of yield farming pools, although you sounds like you have that too. But
We have the APY, yes. We have the APY, which is made up of rewards in our own token and also the tokens of all the projects in our portfolio.
right. And that list of additional tokens is dynamic because as
Yes,
more occur,
yes.
so a lot of these staking
Yes.
pools might have, you know, a relationship with one other token or two other
Yes.
tokens, and it's kind of finite, and you kind of predict where you
Yes.
stand and what the
Much more
return is.
predictable, yes.
But in your long position or bet is that over time you will literally have 40 tokens that are getting
Yes.
every day you're getting 40 of these tokens. But the
Yes.
way what you earn is a fractional amount based on your position in the overall pool. So if I put
Yes.
$100,000 in and there's 30 million, I'm
Yes.
getting that ratio of the
Yes.
daily amount. It doesn't matter
Yes.
when I come in. It really is a
Exactly.
function of the overall pool. So it
Correct,
doesn't
correct.
but if I put in $100, isn't that fractional amount so small that it creates a disincentive because it might not be worth the gas fees to even convert?
On Ethereum in the past the gas fees have been really high, but I think recently it's gone down a lot. But yeah, I mean we are on Binance Smart Chain and we are on Polygon Network and we are going to be launching on Algorand. So those networks, the gas fees are much, much lower. So even $100 is still reasonable. So yeah, you would avoid Ethereum as a blockchain to interact with our smart contract.
And these smart contracts are in multi-chain? I mean, the same smart
Yes.
contract communicates with these
Our
different chains?
platform, yeah, our platform is running on Ethereum, Binance Smart Chain, and Polygon. And we will launch our platform on Algorand as well, and then onto other blockchains in the future as well.
But again, to clarify for people that are less versed in this,
Yeah.
if I put that $100,000 through the Polygon smart
Yes.
contract, does that mean I can see it by entering your platform from another one? Or I basically just need to change the network on my wallet and
You'd
that's.
need to change. Yeah, you'd need to change the network on your wallet to the correct network that you are actually participating on.
But the back end is still the aggregate amount for all of the investments coming in through all of these different networks, that 30 million, or is it going to be then
The
bifurcated into different pools?
back end adds up the whole kind of
Adds
total
up.
value locked. Yeah. So when I'm telling you the total value locked, I'm saying it's across Ethereum, Binance, and Polygon, and it adds it up.
And everybody benefits. The investment in that particular seed round might have been on Ethereum, but you might be on the Polygon. Staking in your through the Polygon network, and you're still benefiting from that token. But if
You would
that.
need to the if you're staking on a network, you would get the tokens of the projects that are in our portfolio that are actually
On that network.
functional on that network only.
So you don't wrap the tokens and push them
No.
across.
We don't change from one, we don't distribute the project tokens across all the blockchains. But in the future, we are looking at different technologies out there which would enable us to actually allow people to stake one token on one network and enjoy the tokens from all the other blockchains as well. So that's something that we're working on in the future.
That's fascinating. Well, I think so. If people want to engage with your platform, they can simply go to your website with their wallet and, yes. and start investing, correct?
Correct, yes. As easy as that.
And, yes. and like just as a point in time today, it sounds like we're mm-hmm. in an early stage of the evolution of this DeFi project. But is it already generating returns that you can?
Yes.
So what? Yes, yes. What is the yes. current?
The range. The range of the range of yield on staking at the moment is anywhere between 30% to 100%, depending on which network you're staking on. So on Polygon, which is the newer network, because there's a lower total value locked, it's a much higher APY there. Mm-hmm. On Ethereum, which is the most established network, the APY is about 30%. But as time goes by and as the tokens of more projects that we've invested in start unlocking, that would mean that the yield would go up over time as well. So it's dynamic, but I think in the long run it will be going up.
So in this world of creating the DeFi of venture capital for the how crowded is that space? How many projects like yours are there?
I can't think of any other project that's doing things exactly how we're doing. Mm-hmm. There are some projects out there which are trying to do something similar in that, you know, some of them might have a DAO associated where a group, the community decides which projects to invest in and so on. Other projects, they kind of have a fund, but and it's through a smart contract, but they don't have their own token and you can't stake their token to actually get access to the portfolio. So I don't think there's anybody that's doing things the way we are. There's people that are trying to do something similar, but not quite as inclusive or quite as thorough as what we're doing and very well kind of thought out and structured and you know we've made sure that everything is done through smart contract from the moment you participate to the moment you kind of exit, and you can do so at any time. And I think maybe over time some other projects might do something, might imitate what we're trying to do, but for now I can't think of any other project that's doing something with mm-hmm. the same as what we're doing.
So one of the hallmarks of this new way of doing business is that a lot of these projects actually help each other, or like create value and then invest in other projects, right? That's like yeah. part of the spirit of Web3. It's also a means of diversification because there's a lot of risk in your project. So you start diversifying and investing in other projects with the income that you, with even with the money you raised for your own project, that's a common yeah. occurrence. Are you feeling that? Are you?
Yes. Yes, we have. So even with our portfolio projects, we have a group where they all interact with each other and they all support each other. And some of them have invested in each other's projects as well. And, you know, we've connected them to a lot of service providers within our network because of that exchange of information that's happening between us and the projects we've invested in. And then we've had projects that are in our portfolio that are actually partnered and working together, and they kind of complement each other and the different product or service that they're providing that's complementing the other one. So there's been a lot of kind of collaboration within our portfolio projects and across our network of strategic partners as well. So that's very much evident in our community.
And is that a Discord community like other crypto projects?
We have a Discord community. We have a Telegram community. We have Twitter, Reddit, YouTube, website. That's what most of the other kind of crypto projects have. In the future, maybe we'll go for Instagram and TikTok. For the younger generation, mm-hmm. But that's something that we're thinking of for the future.
What is the constitution of your team today?
So today we have 42 people in the team. Mm-hmm. A year ago, it was just myself and two other people in the team. And the team is made up of people on the community management side, on the research side, on the investment side, operations, and technology side and project management side as well. So it's a varied range of areas that we cover that would help with all the different areas that need to be covered when we're investing in projects.
So you mentioned that you don't take a management fee from the investors. So how do you finance this team?
So yeah, we have, like I said, from the allocation of the total supply that's on our balance sheet, over a period of time, we liquidate some tokens to actually fund the operations and the salaries of the employees and the team, and to fund some investments as well.
Right. So that's just remarkable and hard for most people listening to understand. And is kind sure. of the essence of the revolution.
It is very complicated.
Yeah. And that's, it's very counterintuitive for traditional investors to understand what you just said. And we probably need another hour to unpack that. And I can probably speak to you for another 2 hours. Sure. But I think we've kind of arrived at the mark, and maybe we'll just do another session, because I think this, what you're doing is absolutely fascinating and important work. It's important not just because it's trailblazing and a way to make money. It's also empowering a lot of these young entrepreneurs to be able to move humanity forward with their projects. So creating that ecosystem is really, I think, a very important task. And I'm really inspired by everything that's happening there, and further inspired by our conversation. And I look forward to the next time we talk and hear how Sisha is proceeding. And for those listeners that are interested, we will have the link. We'll have the link in the show notes. And I know I'm going to invest. So you have one additional investor, and hopefully some others.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for making the time today to speak to us.
My absolute pleasure, Ido, and looking forward to speaking again. Hopefully next time it won't be in Ramadan when I'm fasting and my throat is dry from speaking.
Oh, sorry. We didn't notice.
I can't drink anything. So.
We didn't notice.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ido.
Thank you, really
enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
Start your .metaverse journey today. You can claim your .metaverse Web3 domain for free right now at touchcast.com. Thank you so much for joining us. Subscribe today to stay up to date with our latest episodes.